on Google Plus. Just search the generic live show and react. This is the generic live show with Dale Kim. Here on a Thursday here on the Generic Live Show, whether you're listening to us live or on your hard drive. I do appreciate your listenership, and I do apologize for crunchy audio, because audio standard should be really, really high on the Generic Live Show by now. But, you know, we can't help loading web pages, unfortunately. They are kind of slow and chunky. Hey, speaking of slow and... I'm kidding. I shouldn't make that transition. Hey, yet another Malcolm Turnbull story. Yay, anyone keeping count yet? No, we are entering into kind of a... kind of political season here in the country, as local government election have been called for March. And we'll bring those races to you if we do seem fit. Of course, we'll bring those to you at the appropriate level. And then we've got the actual elections happening at some point in the future as well. Now, Australia is seeking a mental health overhaul in the country. Australians crippled by mental illness will receive individual care as part of a federal government overhaul of a million-dollar sector, excuse me. Some key points in this, though. Stepped care model will provide various levels of care depending on needs. Just, okay. 30 existing government-supporting phone and online services to be converted to a single hotline and digital gateway. 85 million dollars to go towards Indigenous mental health services over 3 years. I like that, though. An online and telephone one-stop shop services will be established, directing people to appropriate services as the government abandons its current one-size model fits all approach. Patients are currently entitled to 10 Medicare subsidized psychology sessions annually, but concerns have raised that is not adequate for these people with multiple needs. People with severe and complex needs will have access to an integrated care package, including psychological services, mental health nursing, along with drug and alcohol services. Quote, we are setting out a blueprint that reforms puts the individual at care of our mental health system, Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull said. The changes will also provide extra funding for Indigenous Mental Health and Sea Primary Health Network Commission, the services needed by mentally ill people in their regions. Overall funding will not be increased, with the federal government currently spending about $10 billion on mental health care each year. It is vital that we do so in a way that puts the individual and the patient at care, that gives real choice and consistency, Prime Minister Turnbull said. The government will establish a single mental health hotline to direct people to the appropriate services after a review of more than 30 government-supported hotline and mental services. What does this... And also, we mentioned at the beginning a stepped care model. What does a stepped care model actually mean? People at risk will receive help online. Patients with mild problems get counseling. Those with moderate issues continue with medical subsidized psychology sessions. And people with severe disorders going on to a plan organized through primary health networks. So, there you go. As revealed by the ABC, the government will provide more funding, excuse me as I move my microphone away from my mouth, for Aboriginal and Torres Strait Islander communities, with $85 million going towards Indigenous mental health over 3 years. The changes will roll out over 3 years from 2016. So this whole rollout will take 3 years. We have an article here about how this will impact the economy. We'll get to that in just a sec. But looking at the changes on face value, these changes, I like these changes, are well-made changes, as I'm, again, move my microphone around. But these are good changes. I like these changes. These changes have been well overdue, trust me. Whether we consolidate everything down into one big whole group, I thought this, the plan of this was to get away from this one model fits all kind of thing. But if we're creating a centralized approach to kind of combat having clutter, then I'm okay with this. If that centralized viewpoint is kind of just to direct people around in various places, then yes, I'm okay with that. We are not, I hope, and this is my one question, I hope that we're not abolishing those 30 different services for different areas. I think what a good idea would be is to kind of consolidate those services into those kind of a central hotline. So a central hotline then get branched out to those particular areas. That is what I want to see, and that is kind of what I want to happen. Now, I want to see. Now, what I want to see is a faster rollout. I know, I understand these things take time, but how about a stepped approach to this rollout? Because this rollout's going to take a while. This rollout's going to take a long while to do. And I think this rollout kind of has this kind of, this is what we're going to do. Again, my problem, and it comes back to the NBN. How are we going to do this? Are we going to introduce new policies and new procedures of doing things? Or are we going to use current policies and procedures and current infrastructure for crying out loud for this central hotline? And I shouldn't be focusing on that, but that is the one concern that I have. Because the other stuff is self-explanatory, and I'm not making fun of mental illness, I'm reporting the news. Full disclaimer. But I want to say, I don't want to load that article up again. Load that article up again and see what it says. Let's see. Mental health. Okay, so because that is the biggest part. A stepped model is what is. But how do people? How do you? Do psychologists establish what step of the model you should be on, or who establishes that? But yeah, the central consolidation of phones is where my focus is. I had a train of thought way before that, but I don't know what, I have no idea what, where I was going with that at all. But apart from that, I like this idea, and it's a long time coming. But how are you going to roll it out? How is this going to play out over the 3 years? So that is my only question with the step model. The more funding for Indigenous areas is kind of self-explanatory. It is kind of what it is. So there's that. So we have an article here that kind of gives a little bit of a different perspective. And I like this. I like when one person can provide a different perspective. It kind of lets the audience make up their own mind. So Prime Minister Malcolm Turnbull has emphasised the impact of mental health has on the Australian economy while releasing a shake-up of funding for services. The government spent about $10 billion annually for mental health treatment, which needed to be delivered more efficiently, he told reporters at Parliament House on today, this morning. Quote, the impact of depression and other mental illnesses on our productivity, I think, makes, I think all of us know this is not from personal experience from friends and family, is ginormous. Mr. Turnbull said. Mental illness is groans away at productivity, and offering individualized care packages would be transformative, he says. Health Minister Susan Lee said the government has listened to the sector, careers and families, and wanted to match services to people's levels of need. At the moment, it tends to be a one-size-fits-all model, she said. The National Mental Health Commission's chairman, Alan Fields, cited OSCD research showing the cost of mental illness to the GBT was 4%. Quote, I believe that economic gains from mental health reform actually dwarf the gains that would be achieved from any other economical reforms being talked about at present, he said. The government says the reinforced focus on the number of concrete actions. And that goes into what it is. We've done that. Professor Ian Hickory from Brain and Mind Research Institute acknowledged mental health reforms under earlier previous Prime Minister John Howard and Julia Gillard. Quote, but we never got structural reform here, he said. The changes were about getting support where you live. Quote, if a young person who needs drug and alcohol support, needs education support, and needs a mental health nurse to attend the physical problems aside from the physiological problems, then we need to be able to cash out the packages of their care in their regions, he said. And that is a good point that I haven't thought of, that I hadn't really thought about before now, is that these people, locale of this is important as well. Where are we located into bringing these kind of support packages to people in kind of the regions as well? So that is definitely an important factor to bring up for sure. But I don't want to be doom and gloom on this. It is a step in the right direction. While there are problems that people not like me are bringing up, but people who are professionals in the field are bringing up as well. You know, you kind of have to take tit for tat as well. We can't think of everything, but this is definitely a step in the right direction as well for mental health. And, you know, I understand there are a lot of people in mental health in regional areas, and that's what's not being presented here. I mean, the online are good, but what if people don't have access to the psychologist, for example? That is what's kind of the bad thing, not the bad thing about this, but the kind of interesting thing that hasn't been considered about this is that do we need more psychologists and that sort of thing? What does that funding look like to kind of provide those additional services to people as well who do live in those regional areas? So, you know, it kind of, while we have that reform and we have this structural reform, I think there's more to be done. This is probably a stepping stone. I hope it's a stepping stone to actually having the reform that we need. And in the overall picture of things as well. As we continue here on GLS, well, we have the $64,000 question of the week. What happened to the mining industry? That's it. That's the question. What happened to the mining industry? We'll answer that difficult question as we continue here on GLS, here on a Thursday. It's 1:19.
Whatever the time of day, whatever the time of the night, we're here to serve you a big dose of genericness with your host, Dale Campbell.
Joining us here on a Thursday here on the Generic Live Show. Isn't that a beautiful song? I just want to let that play. It's The Faithful Dog by the Coldplay Connection. Yes, it is. It's a beautiful little piece. So, you know, take that for what you will. I'm calling piano and beautiful classical music beautiful. So take that for what you will. Hey, so Generic Live Show. We often ask people the $64,000 question on the show. I feel like we should like combine every time I say that $64,000 question of the week. It feels like something that I should ask our listeners. But $64,000 question, what happened to the mining industry? I mean, really, these are important questions. What happened to the mining industry? Well, after all the reports of a severe downturn in the mining investment in Australia over recent years being a drag on economic growth, might have be wondering, when will the headwind ease? The latest government data show engineering construction, mostly mining, was down a sizable 7.3% in the third quarter versus the second quarter. So, short answer is get comfortable. As this it won't desist for a while yet, some, including the Reserve Bank of Australia, estimate the mining investment drop is about half over, meaning another 2 years or more to run. Those assumptions illustrate nicely on how big the mining investment boom, which peaked in 2011, was, quote, it's the hangover from once a century mining boom, said Gareth, unquote, said Gareth Aid, an economist at the Commonwealth Bank of Australia. The drag on growth from falling mining investment through 2015-2016 isn't expected to lessen until 2016-2017, Mr. Arad said. Now, okay, so, you know, I have an idea. Why don't we invest in more things? You know, here's an idea, gang. Why don't we just invest in more things? Like, you know, not pull all of our eggs in one basket. I thought as a country, that was our job, is to kind of not put all of our eggs in one basket, but and have a portfolio of investments. But, you know, that's just my personal belief. Hey, I'm not running a country, so, you know, that's fun. That's sarcasm, by the way. That really a statement, but it's true, though. I'm here to speak the truth, and it's an unpopular opinion, but, you know, who really cares? But anyway, so I actually don't mind the idea of investing in more things. Why can't we invest in more kind of... We kind of are showing a tendency since 2011 in investing more things. We've had, particularly in this country in the most recent past, we've had... two downturns. We had 2007, we had 2012, when we're coming off the high of that mining boom. So, you know, we've had our fun, now we've kind of gotten get serious. We've had our party, and I'm going to use the hangover analogy more so, because it's kind of relevant. So, why, we've had our fun, we've had our party, we are having a hangover, now we have to kind of get serious and get down to business. Now, we are finding that we are spreading our wings a little bit, and we had the story in the previous segment about how we are investing more into mental health services. That is kind of, that is an expenditure to the government, but we need more revenue streams. We need more revenue streams, and I don't know, and I say that, but I don't realistically know what that entails per se, but I do know that it needs to happen, and I'm not smart enough, nor am I an economist, and nor do I claim to be, I don't claim to be much, but we do need to kind of have this kind of backup kind of stream of things, just so we're not relying on boom after boom after boom. And we had that story, I think, last week or the week before, about how mining, the drop in iron ore and that sort of thing as well, should be key indicators that we should be moving to other revenue streams. But, you know, we're kind of not. So that is the problematic situation that we have found ourselves in over the last couple of years since 2011 and since the crash in 2012. Okay, behind the scenes, if you can hear that noise, please let me know, because it's really irritating me. I don't think you can. So I do have the window closed and the silencers on. But anyway, that's just off tangent. So I think that, you know, I think that the people who are economists need to suggest more revenue streams for people, because that is where we're going to have more, we need more sustained income. Otherwise, we're going to have downturn after downturn after downturn. And we've seen that in mining companies in the stock exchange have had downturns because the mining industry is just not there for them anymore, because these revenue streams don't exist. As we continue here on the Generic Live Show, well, we have a bit of comic book news. We haven't done a comic book news segment on the show. Are you a fan of Captain America? Well, the 90-second teaser trailer dropped. What does this mean for us? It means that we get to see more footage of what this movie looks like. As we continue, it's 1:30.
Finally found the most generic live show. This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
Do you wanna collaborate on my project?
Thank you for joining us here on a Thursday here on the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell. So glad to be with us, whether you're listening to us live or on your hard drive. We do appreciate your listenership on however you choose to consume the show. Now, we are the most, we have finally found the most generic live show, because we have gone from talking about the mining boom, mental health, Facebook, to now comic books. So we do actually, this is actually the first, I think, first ever comic book segment we've done, definitely in recent history. I don't know about previous incarnations of the show, but we do have a comic book double shot for you here on a Thursday for you. This is we're doing a great service for you. So the Captain America Civil War trailer, it unleashes the first footage of the movie, as many fans expected, or at least hoped. Stars Robert Downey Jr. and Chris Evans debuted first footage from Captain America Civil War on ABC's Jimmy Kimmel Live. Evans introduced the first trailer, which you can, there was an article there, and I watched the trailer during the commercial break, so if you do hear the crunchy audio, that's why. I lost my train of thought there. I just watched the trailer in the commercial break. That's where I was going with that. And I have thoughts on it. I I watched it during a commercial break for a radio show, which I shouldn't do, but I have seen it, so I have watched the teaser. I have a few little comments on there that I've noted now. Along with the teaser, Downey Jr. introduced the following one sheet from the film. It's a picture of Captain America and Iron Man facing off with basically a star with everything in the star grayed out. And there's a circle in the star. Yep, okay, you get the idea. Divided We Fall is the tagline on this poster. Marvel Captain America Civil War May 6th. Sebastian Stan's Bucky Barnes had a large part in the teaser, indicating that Cap's friendship with old sidekick will play a major role in the third movie in the franchise. That word threequel is being used, which I don't really like. Anyway, because it is a... according to a comic book resources poll that asked, what did you think of the Captain America Civil War trailer? The results are... okay, here we go. 80.6% of people loved it. 81% said they loved it. Let's see. 17% say that it was all right, but they wanted to see more. And 2% said that they hated it. So that is Comic Book Resources polling the audience on the trailer. I'm not going to say what I voted in there, but anyway. Marvel Studios previously screened footage from the sequel over the summer during presentations at Scene Europe and Disney's D23 Expo, but this is the first time that any has been shown to the general public. As for the interview portion, Evans and Downey Jr. kept things light, talking about their friendship and their experience filming this past summer on shooting at the pick in Atlanta. Evans joked with Kimmel, I could have chosen maybe maybe not Atlanta in July. I love Atlanta, it's just the humidity gets tough, which I don't know much about Atlanta, Georgia, but from what I hear, yeah, it's a sweats fest in July. But anyway, I don't know what happened there with my audio. Directed by Anthony and Joe Russo, who directed Captain America Winter Soldier, Captain America Civil War picks up where the Avengers Age of Ultron left off, with Evans Steve Rogers leading a new team of heroes, but after another international incident involving the Avengers, results in collateral damage, political pressure, months into the institute a new system of accountability and government oversight, creating a fracture within Earth's mightiest heroes as they protect the world from a new threat. Evans and Downey are joined in the sequel by Scarlett Johansson, Sebastian Stan, Anthony Mackie, Paul Bettany, Jeremy Renner, Don Cheadle, Elizabeth Olsen, Paul Rudd, Chadwick Boseman, Emily Van Camp, Daniel, Frank William Hart, and Martin Freeman. It opens on May 6th. I like Captain America movies. They're a bunch of fun. They're a bunch of fun. And I did watch the teaser trailer. Now, of course, I'm not going to give anything away that happens in the trailer. But I will say this. It does, to me, feel like they were being a bit selective on what kind of footage that they show, which is fair enough. It doesn't give away anything that we don't already know. I'm going to say that. And they said that to me earlier today, and I agree with them. It doesn't... We already know particular things, and I'm not going to say them on air, because I'm very super sensitive when it comes to this sort of thing. I'm not sensitive about spoilers, but I'm about sensitive about spoiling other people. In the wrong context. If the show is about spoilers, then sure, it's fair game. And if you've been warned about spoilers, that's what that is as well. I'm interested in seeing what unfolds here. However, for a Captain America film, the teasers showed surprisingly less amount of Captain America than what I was anticipating. I'll say that. And I'm afraid that it's not going to show as much Captain America as I would like in this movie. I'm still probably going to go see it. I'm still probably going to enjoy it like I enjoyed The Avengers. I'm just a bit... I want more Captain America in my Captain America movie, and I want my Avengers in my Avengers movie. That's fair. And I'm not... It's not a bad teaser. It's a good teaser. It shows footage. So there's that. It shows action. It shows... You know? It shows... It has a different dynamic. So... It shows all of the things that we want from a teaser trailer. So it shows what we want in a trailer to get us excited. But it's a Captain America movie, so there's that. Also, I like the fact that they did go on a TV interview to introduce it to an audience. I do like that. And I do like the fact that the two main people are doing press routes as well. They probably are getting awkward questions about their friendship in relation to this movie. That's all I will say there. Meanwhile, according to CNN, now, you know, CNN reporting the big comic book news of the century, because that's what they do. They report comic book news. So, Landmark Dark Knight comic gets a... Do I say this word? Gets a sequel... A sequel's sequel... Sequel? I'm confused. Gets a... Yeah, they get... Yeah, they get that. There was a time when Batman was known as primarily a noble consumed crime fighter, which blows were occasionally centered with BAMs and POWs. In 1986, that all changed when artist Frank Miller unleashed The Dark Knight Returns, a futuristic version of the middle-aged Batman who was much darker and incredibly violent. There you go. That all changed in 1987. No, that's not what changed as well. Aaron Sturgis of Blaster.com took notice of the book in early 1997. Quote, The Dark Knight Returns is one of the best Batman stories ever, and its name changed so frequently from both diehard comic fans and those who were just sounded who wanted to sound educated about the medium, he said. Miller's Batman was both a sideshow path with arrested development, which is the kind of you might expect from a billionaire who never moved past his parents' murders and instead surrounded himself with a room filled with expensive toys. Miller's also known for authorizing Sin City and 300, that is revisiting this saga for a second time in three decades after 2002's less received Dark Knight Strikes Again, with the just-released Dark Knight 3, The Master Race. The acclaimed writer Brian Azzarol is helping take on this new story, reuniting the original Claus, Jason, taking on his duties with Andy Calbert. Batman in Dark Knight is an outlaw, Azzarol explained at New York City Comic Con last month. He's not a friend of the police, nor Superman's biggest and tallest than life itself. Superman is an inspirational force. He's big. That's something that Batman fights against. In the original Batman vs. Superman went toe-to-toe with something heavily influenced by the upcoming film Batman vs. Superman Dawn of Justice. Not to mention Tim Burton's 1988 Batman film and Christopher Nolan's recent Dark Knight trilogy. In other words, Dark Knight Returns has... has had a hand in nearly every iteration of the character over the last three decades, along with establishing comic and graphic novels as primarily an adult medium. Needless to say, expectations for the new Dark Knight are high. Quote, I'm trying not to expect anything because expectations can set us for disappointment, Boney said. Anyway, still, it's easy those expectations given the Dark Knight Returns status of Batman as a Batman classic. The world Miller built is fantastically dark and packed with so much social commentary that several rereads in, I still feel like tidbits are still relevant today. And this Batman, another thing that sets this Batman apart is Miller's unpoetic point of view. This world is essentially chaotic, dangerous place where authorities cannot be trusted. Is how he phrased it at New York Comic Con. Therefore, it needs Zorro, a criminal who can fight for innocent civilians. The status quo cannot be trusted. So yeah, a new Batman property. Do we need a new Batman property? Do we need a revival of a revival? We're reviving things that... Gee, we ran out of ideas. We're reviving something that is essentially revived. So, have fun with that. We're reviving something that needs revive. Okay. It's going to be good, though. I'm not really a Batman fan. I like it. It's enjoyable for what it is. But I'm more of a Spider-Man type of girl myself. I do enjoy Spider-Man a whole lot. And I recently found in my cupboard, it's all the way over there near my filing cabinet, but I do have The Amazing Spider-Man. So that is going to come in handy to my trip to America, trying to read through that. There's a lot in there as well. As we continue here on GLS... We have another question. It's not a $64,000 question, but it does analyze. Should our personal assistants on our phones have sassy, quote-unquote, sassy attitudes? We'll analyze the sass levels required by personal assistants coming up on the show. As we continue, it's 1:49.
This is the Generic Live Show with Dale Campbell.
And heart is full of shame, cause you, where's your angel? How could you lose your angel?
That is right, how can you lose your angel? Thanks for joining us here on a Thursday, here on the Generic Live Show. That's not actually a question, it is a hypothetical question. As we continue moving off that really, really quickly, we have an article here. Thank you for joining us, by the way. I don't know what I'm saying. It's rough. It's rough. You know, 2 hours a week. That's all we ask. Thank you for joining us. We have a question for you. As the dawn of digital assistance becomes prominent, should these digital assistants be sassy? Should they have attitudes? As people know, Suri has a little bit of attitude, particularly when there's a new one going around at the moment. When you ask her what she likes to drink, there's a quick answer. I have a thirst for knowledge, she responds. That's pretty funny. I like that. Meanwhile, her counterpart, Cortana, opts for a very, very dry martini, which is very, very eloquent. That makes me want to talk like this. But M, also, by the way, what a name for a personal assistant. M. from the aforementioned lovely Facebook that we talked about earlier in the program is testing to flex the question by going, I have no opinion on that. What is your favorite drink? That last part I added in. As tech giants race to build ever better artificial intelligence platforms, they're observing over nucleus of their digital assistants' personalities. The big question is, should they have personality? Well, this article by Drew Love argues that they should to a certain degree. I mean, they should have some sort of personality to make the interactions more interesting, of course. But they should keep it toned down a little. Just, you know, they don't want to fight the kind of establishment, per se. You know what I mean? They don't want to go against corporate, you know, against the corporation who created it. And they don't want to go against, you know, the person that, you know, created it, and they don't want to go against definitely the people, the corporation, and they don't want to go against the actual person using it, or the end user agreement that, you know, they're breaching information, blah, 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 sensitivity, blah, 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 blah. So, I have a feeling that this Facebook thing that is called M, that no one's ever heard about, apparently, it's a no-nonsense assistant focusing on handling chores such as ordering flowers or making restaurant reservations. We wanted M to be really open and available to do anything. A really white piece of paper. And see how people use it. Alex Letburn, a Facebook executive who oversees the AL team for M, said in interviews with Reuters. Now, where I stand on this, I think that personal assistants, what are personal assistants? Let's break that down. Personal assistants are people that help you with your everyday life. Well, that's what they should be. I know there's stories about secretaries out there and wild marriage affairs, but basically you could argue that that makes people's lives better or worse. But anyway, the point is that they're there to help people. That is what they're there for. So, whether they make the life good or bad, that they're ultimately here to help for. Now, if you can have a funny interaction with, I don't know why you're having a funny interaction with your computer to start with, but it helps, you know, if you're here at the office, and I'm here at the office most times throughout the week, and if I'm here doing things, you know, I want something to entertain me. I'm listening to podcasts, I'm listening to music, but if I have my personal assistant here, I mean, I have my S5 here, and I have my iPad here, and I have my iPad here, and I'm going, ooh, do-do-do-do, you know, I might want to do, you know, have a conversation with my computer, which is kind of creepy to say, but while I'm here checking my messages and all the rest of it, I might want to have a little bit of a banter. That's what I do. I also live by myself, so any sort of interaction with a human is particularly a good thing. So I can, any interaction I can get is kind of good because I'm lonely. But anyway, so I believe that they should have SaaS, and I don't mind if I'm not going to push the envelope too far. And people know that they want something that they're going to use again. If they can get something good out of a product, they're going to want to use it again. That is the point of a product. You use it because you enjoy it. This M thing is just going to be, you know, hello, my name is M. So it's going to be robotic. People are going to use it, but they're just going to go, I get no joy out of using this product or service. So I'm not gonna be toying it around, and I'm not gonna, you know, be wanting to use it so much. So, you know, that is what, you know, people want enjoyment out of their products. So, and I understand that they want yes, it's about productivity and it's about getting more out of your product, but you know, you gotta take it for what it is. It's a funny little personal assistant. It's a personal assistant, and you joke about it. You think about real life. Your personal assistant. You joke with your personal assistant all the time. You don't literally go. I hope you don't. People out there with PAs. I hope you don't go to them. Get me a coffee. Where's a restaurant? You joke around with them, and you make them more feel like humans. These digital assistants. So, and I'm a little in support of that. So, you know, that is, they make them more human-like because no one demands orders from a PA without having a joke. That concludes our broadcast day. Thank you so much for joining us here on the Generic Live Show. Thank you for joining us. It's 2:00. You've been listening to a radio program provided by the Chef Wonder Media Network. For this and other shows, visit chefwonder.squarespace.com. For more radio programs like this one, copyright 2015. Ah, see? 2015.
Copyright 2015. Geek.io. Geek. Geek. Geek.